Right. Welcome again to everybody here at this presentation for the full year results for 2018. You know our approach by now. We start with by explaining some highlights. Hans will have the floor mainly about the figures and their explanations, and I shall dwell on the outlook. I'll also dwell briefly on the survey activities at the end, what they are comprised of, to give you some idea of the volume, what sort of vessels and how many people are involved, what margins are we posting there. Well, the highlights, you will have noticed a nice increase in the revenue. Just this morning in my presentation to the personnel, which is always the first thing on this day, I said that we've had a very good year, a year too that we can be proud of as a company. If you look at the volume of work we've done and the kinds of activities we've done, very nice complex works. The order intake too, we've again succeeded in this market to grow the portfolio, the order book further, and also to grow the revenue further. Of course, a comment there is that it is a very fine revenue in a very difficult market, which is expressed in the EBITDA figures, and in the EBITDA has gone back to some 350 million net operating result, some 80 from 150 last year. There's quite a sizable item. We reported on this in the interim, the intended sale of Sam Smith also signified an extra impairment on the harbor towage activities of almost half a billion. All of those are non-cash, by the way. Well, solvency is still very stable. Net debt is quite limited, so we have a very strong balance sheet. But Hans will say more about that. The dividend proposal, we discussed this extensively in the past few months, also with our shareholders. We also contacted you about this. In the end, we thought that it was wise to deviate from our regular policy of choice. We've moved now to all cash, which we thought was appropriate given the current price level. And we have a payout of an 80% net profit after adjustment for the impairment. That's the story and the main outlines. I now give the floor to Hans for the details.
Thank you. Let me start with the order book. As said, this significantly increased as we saw in H1 and in dredging. We've particularly seen projects that were acquired in H1 in Singapore. The two major projects, including a relatively long period of implementations, as we commented at H1, and I'll give you the figures right away. That means that from the order book, about 40% in dredging will be implemented from 2021 and later, and from the 60%, about two-thirds will be implemented in 2019 and one-third in the course of next year. But also in offshore energy, we've seen a significant increase in the order book, and this is related to a number of things. You've seen the examples. You see particularly projects in the field of wind power, cable laying by the end of the year. We will have a significant number of, or we have gained a significant number of projects, so an increase there as well. The figure of offshore energy is about 40%, almost 50% will be implemented in 2019, meaning that 30% will be implemented in 2020, and from 2021, 25% and beyond. And that also means the following. For last year, we had very little for 2020 in the order books, and now gradually orders are coming in, and that particularly applies to HMT for execution after 2021. Let me now continue with these segment results. Let me start with the overall overview. As Peter said, revenues have increased across the board, basically, but particularly in dredging, about 10% increase, and I'll come back to that in a moment. So if you look at offshore energy, you see higher revenues in the past year, including an effect of the Gardline acquisition, which was only included for part of 2018, although it isn't an immense effect. More important is the fact that with Gardline, in comparison with the previous year, the revenue significantly increased. It's mainly about good volumes in contracting and lower volumes in contracting and services, particularly thinking about HM2 and Intouch and Solvage. We only have the figures of Solvage. Solvage had a busy year. I will come back to that in a moment. But once again, we see higher revenues there. And looking at the complete results in dredging, we see results in line with the higher revenues. We see a higher EBIT level with stable margin developments. In offshore energy, we have seen a slight plus for the full year. It was in the red during H1. We had a minus 7 million EBITDA figure. At least we managed to get it into the black with a positive result of about 12 million. And Towage and Salvage showed a stable result compared to 2017. The build-up has slightly changed, as I will explain later. And if you look at the holding and eliminations, you also see a stable situation compared to 2017. And when leaving aside the extraordinary charges, we see an overview here of the operating results showing a good performance in dredging and stable performance in offshore energy and towage and salvage, leading to the result on the screen. Now, in brief about the breakdown by regions in terms of revenues, this is related to an important cable laying project being implemented in the Netherlands and also related to higher revenues in inland infra activities in the Netherlands. Europe also slightly higher, mainly in the field of wind power. Middle East has shown decent revenues in the past year, related also to some salvage activities in the region. And if you look at North and South America, here we see significantly lower revenues. We had a big project in Brazil, which was not the case in 2018, or hardly the case in 2018. Let me now turn to dredging. First, I'll take you to the next slide, which is the utilization of equipment. As said, we have seen a 10% increase in revenues, which is a significant utilization level for the heaviest category of hoppers. As I said before, a category that's much more important than cutters. It's about 6-7 times the weight. Well, we had the utilization level of 36 weeks, slightly higher than in 2017. And looking at cutters, we see a slight improvement vis-à-vis 2017. Please remember that 2017 only included the Helios for a half of the year, which significantly contributes to the capacity of the cutters. It amounts to about half of the cutter capacity. And we have had 16 weeks of utilization last year. That doesn't mean that the Helios has seen a disappointing utilization level. It performed fine in line with planning. It was out of work for some time, but it has a utilization of about 30 weeks. It's mainly the smaller cutters that had limited amounts of work in the course of the past year. Based on the utilization rates, we've seen higher revenues in the course of the past year with a stable margin in EBIT and EBITDA. And as usual, we've seen mixed results on work at hand or projects implemented during the year. And we also see some unwinding leading to stable margins. Once again, the Netherlands generated a stable contribution to the slightly higher revenues and margins within the profile we've seen during the past years, with EBIT margins between 3 and 4%. I've referred to the order book already, which particularly reflects the effects of the major Singapore projects, but also projects such as the extension of the Iberg Island in Amsterdam and many, many other smaller projects. Let me now take you to offshore energy. Here, revenues have been slightly higher. I've mentioned the positive contribution of contracting. It amounts to about 60% of revenues in EBITDA. They are related to contracting activities. In the field of seabed interventions, we have seen significant contributions. These are activities in the field of full pipes related to the Nord Stream 2 project, a pipeline project. But it also concerns landfall operations, also related to Nord Stream 2. We are involved in the onshore activities or the coastal activities in Russia. And we have been working also on the coastal arrival installations of Turk Stream. Both projects were highly successful for us, and we have been working in the field of offshore wind using the Focal Lift 1 practically throughout the year. There has been a lot of cable laying work, and the results of that work were slightly below expectations given projects issues. Wind power projects tend to be complex, and cable laying to a certain extent depends on the timely laying of foundations. And when the work needs to be implemented, it also depends on the weather conditions. Many of the platforms are either on the North Sea or in the Baltic Sea. And by and large, we've seen a positive project contribution throughout the year. We can't say this about services. As you know, AMT required the intervention. And as you know, we have intervened on the Dockwise activities, and we are on track there. We are winding off the last vessels in the light of the impairment that we have taken in the first half of the year. Obviously, we have seen the running up towards two DSVs that we have commissioned in H2, and we are generating good progress here, but this has been the year where we had to position both vessels in the market, and that means that in the field of services, particularly this, we have seen a negative spiral of the results in compared to 2017. Guardline also is attributed to two services. And as I said before, Guardline has made a positive contribution to the results. It has contributed throughout the year, and more importantly, in the course of last year, both the utilization of the vessels has been higher than the previous year, and the pricing level has been better than before. All this meaning that Guardline, from this point of view, has contributed more than we anticipated at the moment of acquisition, early 2018. I've already said that the order book has increased, particularly including many cable laying projects that have been acquired at the end of the year. Now, towage and salvage. The overall result has been stable in comparison with 2017, EBIT identical. At the same time, the composition is different. So the salvage has had a busy year, and that's reflected in the revenues because we've seen 100% attributed to salvage, including two important salvage projects. The Merx Honam was the most important of the two, but another important project was the SSL Kolkata, a salvage job in India. But we've had smaller projects as well, amounting to a large amount of work, particularly in H2. It's been very busy with salvage, showing positive results. And these results almost offset the reduction in results in the joint venture activities. And this is harbor towage, which is the real towage work in harbors, and then the terminal activities, particularly Smit and Lamanoka. This is the most important explanation of the reduction in the results in the harbor towage activities. And I'll come back to Kotag and Sam Smith Towage, the Kotag Smith Towage, the two joint venture companies that are active in that particular field. As usual, I will share the formal 100% figures, then you see the following, and this includes Sam Smith Towage and Kotag Smith Towage and excludes them. So you see two different columns, including and excluding the SST and KOST. So you see what remains when excluding SST and KOST. You still see significant figures here, but at the same time it means that our share will be sold for about 100% EBITDA. The enterprise value, as you have seen in our notifications in euros on 100%, amounts to about 800 million, and that means that both transactions are valued based on a mix of about 8 times EBIT ratio, EBIT to value ratio, and that means that after both transactions, about 115 million assessed on 100% will reflect the 50%, 115, and this is mainly Smith-Lamanalco combined with some smaller terminal joint ventures. And just for the sake of completeness, both transactions, as you can see on the slide, it also includes a debt segment in both joint ventures where we are selling off our stake. The net contribution we expect from both divestments of 50% amounts to about 265 million euros, maybe slightly more. Now, holding and eliminations. Not very exciting. The situation is stable compared to 2017. We have an operating result of about 42 million, which always combines the structural overhead costs that are non-allocated, amounting to about 35, 33 million euros. And in addition, we have some items every year again defined as non-recurring income and expense not allocated to the business units. We had some major issues last year, 50 million related to reorganizations. We had some transactional results from the divestment of real estate. We also had some other one-offs. This has been much less last year, with less income than revenues, but leading to a positive total of about 7 million euros. Now we have extraordinary charges in the course of 2018. You know the top three bullet points because they are identical to the figures indicated in H1. 137 impairment on assets, on vessels, particularly, let's say, the lower segment of the Dockwise fleet and some services vessels. And we have the remaining goodwill of the offshore energy balance sheet amount, and then remains 17 million in winding up provisions. And that's the only extraordinary charge in cash in the list of last year. From the 520 million euros in extraordinary charges, only about 17 million euros by and large is cash out. All other figures are non-cash impairments. And in harbor towage, this was 210 million in the course of the full year. In H1, we had already incurred about 90 million, as we notified in our press release, related to the intended transaction with Sam Smith. About 120 million was added to this amount, and the lion's share of this concerns Sam Smith Towage. Let me point out one element related to this impairment. About half of this impairment is made up of two items. One major item is the share price results. Part of the shareholding, particularly in Sam Smith, are registered in dollars or related currencies. And since the establishment of the joint venture, the price has gone up, so there needs to be a renewed pricing. So we will have some share or exchange rate profits. However, that's not allocated to groups, but to the corporate equity, meaning that you have a higher basis for the equity test at the divestment transaction. We have a higher cost price and therefore a higher write-down. And that has to be reflected in the books now, as we have done in 2018. From the moment the transaction will have been carried out, then this exchange rate profit, obviously, according to the regulations, will be reflected in the books, but only the moment the transaction has been concluded. So this amount is overstated. And we have a second element, as we notified in H1. When establishing the joint ventures, and people with a good memory may remember this, this is the Kotak joint venture in 2017, saw a notification that the transaction results will be part of the operating result. And that means under IFRS, things have changed, because based on IFRS, we have to assess the profit based on the market value of that moment. So we are writing down that amount effectively today. And this is why the 210 are affected by those two factors. The same applies to a number of other joint ventures. And this means that this represents about half, 50% of this particular effect. Now, in brief, some information that you already know. When talking about this transaction with Sam Smith, we refer to two joint ventures in which we have either 49 or 50% of the stakes, not that important. However, we are selling off this stake, and the enterprise value has been established at the level of $560 million, which creates a multiple EV/EBITDA of about 7.5, and after deducting net debt, this has a cash result for us of about €200 million and $200 million. And in euros, this would be 160 million. And if you look at the details on the balance sheet, you see assets held for sale. That's the euro revenue amount of the stake we hold in Sam Smith. And to be complete, if you look at the results from joint ventures of the past year, about 8 million could be attributed to this particular joint venture. It's a quite straightforward transaction. We are selling to a partner who knows the business as well as we do. No due diligence, therefore, is required. We have to get the go-ahead from competition authorities. We expect no problems there, and therefore our expectation is that this transaction can be closed in the second half of 2019. With Kotak Smith, this may take some more time. My expectation is that in H2 this will be concluded. The buyer is Beluda, a real outsider, meaning that they want to get familiar with the business, so due diligence will start. Also, the competition authorities need to be approached, and we expect more time to be needed for this than with Sam Smith. So we expect this transaction to close in H2. We have agreed on an enterprise value assessment of 300 million, which is about 8.5 times the EV EBITDA multiple, leading to a cash consideration of 90 million for the company. And that is about the magnitude reflected in the books. And it's possible another result will come out rather higher than lower, but we don't expect any shockingly higher figures. And the contribution of this joint venture to the results amounted to about 2 million euros last year. Let me briefly take you through the balance sheet, which obviously reflects a lot of what I just said. If you look at property, plant, and equipment, you see this reflected the same for the intangibles and other fixed assets. And we have invested less than we have written down. The intangibles are going down, which reflects the lost goodwill on energy that we have written down. The associated companies are also going down, reflecting the effect of the impairment I just told you about. And you can quickly count, but you see the working capital being negative at 349 million, something I will come back to in a moment, slightly less negative than in 2017. And the net debt position, as Peter said, is extremely solid. The balance sheet is extremely solid. We had a net debt of 131 million end of last year because of the write-down of the goodwill and the impairments on the joint venture. Our balance sheet has become shorter. And if you look at the equity, which obviously includes the full amount of the joint ventures, we will see 65%, which is an extremely healthy and robust figure. Now, what about capital expenditure? This stays within the write-downs of the 32 million. It's, I think, in gross 195 million. Lots of minor investments, dry docks, for instance. And the most important individual item is Krios. Krios, that's under construction. And we have some other investments in expansion of equipment, but most of the investments are related to the annual operations with minor material, dry docks, etc. We have about 17 million in divested equipment. So we have invested 178 million euros. Now, cash flow, you see cash flow reflected here. And the Clios is the sister vessel of the Helios. So that's a very large cutter. Cash flow in line, and the EBITDA results are low, and cash flow in terms of net profits plus write-downs, and therefore lower than in 2017, 320 million way above the level of the capital expenditure. Now, cash flow, I won't take you through this in detail because it reflects the items that have been mentioned. Let me only highlight one point, that is the movement in working capital. Over the full year, this has been negative, nearly 70 million in the negative, but the costs last year were much lower, and in H1 this applied, and I expect seasonal effects in H2 to be reflected in an improvement of the figure, and this is what happened. It comes to 70 million, which still is a snapshot because many projects are reflected here, such as the Merck's Honam operation, First, you work, you carry out the salvage, then you start negotiations about the exact amount, and some of these negotiations led to results at the end of the year, but still we have a negative movement in working capital of 70 million, and all this together still amounts to a very healthy cash flow from operating activities of through 236, more than enough to pay out to service our debts and to pay our dividend. And we even did some buyback of shares in the end of the year. Now, I want to look ahead on a slightly technical issue, which many of you know, that is the application of IFRS 16 in 2019, which means that all lease contracts longer than 1 year, and with the exception of very, very small lease contracts, must be capitalized as a liability that will apply in 2019. So you will not find it reflected in the figures on 2018 because they do not apply with retroactive force, but they will apply as of 2019. What would the effect be? Based on our current insights, somewhere between 75 and 100 euros in assets will be added to the balance sheet as capitalized liabilities, and the same liabilities will be applied, so we will have no rental costs or lease costs, but write-downs, and that means that the EBITDA will grow by 15 to 20 million, and with a similar amount in terms of write-downs, so you'll see the write-downs also affecting the EBITDA. You'll have some interests because this needs to be taken care of, and it will have a very limited negative effect on the profits of the earnings of the company. It's related to write-downs plus interests. This will amount to a higher amount in the earlier years and a lower amount in the later years compared to the rental amounts or the lease amounts. It hardly affects us. And that concludes my contribution. I give the floor back to you, Peter.
Nee, ik zal naar achteren gaan zitten.
Right. Finally, the outlook. Well, I understand the surprising element of today's presentation for you. Well, our business plan. I don't expect a recovery until 2019. I can keep saying that, but they just won't listen. So I repeat once more, outlook 2019, dredging shows stable volumes, and we can assess on the basis of the order book that this will remain so. We see a number of opportunities there. Margins are also fairly stable there in the market. Towage, the same story really. We've dropped a bit further, but it is still fairly stable. Towage also includes terminals. It's not only harbour towage. However, offshore energy and contracting, we've got a number of good projects in the portfolio, and we also see a number of interesting opportunities. Of course, honesty compels me to admit that Nord Stream is an important project for us. As you well know, we keep sailing every day, but if the Oracle of the United States should pronounce something at a given moment, it might have an impact on Nord Stream. We have seen no signals pointing in that direction, but apart from that, the portfolio looks very good, both on the oil and gas side as well as on the wind side, especially cables. Services, there we see a further sliding effect, which is largely down to heavy marine transport, where we see the effect of the emptying of the portfolio, especially for Dockwise, with bigger projects from the past. And the next year, or rather in the current year, we are largely focusing on the spot market. Until today, well, and up until February, we've done rather well there. The utilization rate is not that bad, but really good big projects from the past are not in the portfolio at present. So in this market, you have to fight for that. We see such projects not really appearing quickly for this year, but it is remarkable that if we look ahead for 2020 and 21, we do see them. Ironically speaking, the portfolio for HMT long term is filled better in 2021 and also in 2020 than in 2019. So 2019, in that respect, is really a transitional year, which is also true for the build-up of our diving activities, where we have taken big steps. We've got also a good utilization rate for our two DSVs, diving support vessels. The guidance we gave for earnings was that for the EBITDA level, it's expected to be stable. Of course, 350 is another level than 380. There's also some 10% in the bandwidth of the stability too, but especially at the level of the operational profit in comparison with the year, we are saying that it will be quite a task to realize the operational net profit of 2018. For us, that is reasonably in line. Of course, there may be people saying, what about 2020? Well, I'm a bit reticent to say anything about 2020. But what we do say and indicate in our press release, when we look at the level of activities for 2020 and 21, we see a lot more going on than we've seen for 2018 and than we are seeing for 2019. So I'm not negative for the years ahead. Then again, we will not be seeing those exuberant years of four years ago, which were really extremely good. Which there's also a reason for us to say we shall remain selective and continue to build our business. If you look at the contours of our business and the architecture, if you like, of our business, we are saying 2010 acquisitions, 2014 Dockwise followed. Now we've sold the Harbour Towage joint ventures, and we've cut out the lower end of the transport side, especially for Dockwise. We see contours looming up of the business as we envisage it for the future, with a firm dredging leg and a firm offshore leg and a leg which is in wind as well as in oil and gas activities, where we have excellent assets and a very fine organization. So that's definitely a good point of departure for transport and installation. We do see some opportunities for strengthening our position in the CSV, which we recently chartered against very attractive prices, the Boka Falcon. A beautiful container vessel, a construction vessel, which is really in line with our position at the top end of the S-curve for floating operations in particular. So we are continually trying to strengthen our position there. But on the whole, I'm saying by now we have on board what we can use for the medium to long term. So I am confident that we can expand that further. Well, I also look at LTA for Remco and Saudi. As you know, we qualified for that in the end. We've become an official partner, which is with a beautiful inauguration ceremony, which I was honored in to attend. Meanwhile, the first call-offs are coming in from that framework contract. And at present, we have been invited for some 10 sizable projects to submit tenders. These are projects with many billions of value. One such contract is 150 to 250 million. So together with our partner Lamprell, it's definitely not our ambition to contract all 10 of those works, but one or two would be very nice also to build up experience in that region. You see Aramco making very sizable investments, and more things are about to happen there. I don't think everybody is aware that one of the strategies within Saudi Arabia is that instead of only being an oil exporter, they want to add more value. So they will go more to refinery activities, more to basic chemicals, which all add value. And I can predict that they will be building various things in terms of petrochemical plants, to which we can contribute too also, because harbors will be needed, but also transports. This will all be module built, and those modules will have to be transported there from the Far East. So those are contracts which are important and interesting for heavy marine transport. A bit by analogy with what we are seeing in America, especially in Mexico, there's a lot of investments in LNG. America wants to be a good, big LNG exporter. All the installations used to be built in America, stick-built, but all of that has been shifted to ready-ordered in Korea and China. There we also see a good flow and volume for 2020 and 21 coming on now, both for the LNG side. At this moment, gas is very, very cheap indeed in America, and so it's a very interesting place to invest, especially for LNG and petrochemicals. I predict that petrochemistry industry in Europe will have a heavy time ahead in comparison with the US. Well, 2019 will not be the year of big recovery, but for 2020 and 21, we see signs of positive moves. So for 2020 and the period up to 2022, we are going to prepare a new business plan early in next year and make a new list of things for ourselves. We shall present that to you once it's been finished, and then we can give you better guidance for the years afterwards. As we had communicated, it's our plan to set up to start the share buyback program for 100 million euros. We want to do that in the short term. Of course, we could not do anything until the closed period. Well, today that period ends, so we want to get started on that today. There were colleagues who already phoned us enthusiastically. Now that you've sold Kotag, are you going to buy back even more shares? Well, just do the maths for yourselves. We do that for the daily volume too. Well, if you want to influence your share price, and you need to buy 5, 6, 7% purchase, that will take us about 200 days to burn 100 million, you know, assuming that we can buy all those days. So the 100 million will do us well until the end of the year. Now, for the period after, we shall have a further look at the end of the year. But the clear signal we want to give you, of course, we are giving the full cash, so there will be no dilution of shares at this moment. On the other hand, the 100 million euro buyback program indicates that we are thinking of our shareholders in this period with a cash dividend and the share buyback. I think at the present level of our shares, well, you've helped us further today, it is interesting to do, given the present level of shares. CAPEX, Hans already mentioned, some 265 million. As I indicated, I'd like to go, before we turn to the Q&As, briefly through the survey. By now, we've put this together, in-house survey. We've had activities developed for several times. 18 months ago, we acquired Guardline UK and recently Horizon in the Middle East. So this is the footprint of where we are active, which is quite a global spread. This is even nicer. It indicates for these three companies the background and the story. We've been in survey, wet survey, that is, sea survey, for 40 years. Gardline has been there for some 50 years, originally as a family-run business, and Horizon has done so since 50 years ago. It was set up in the Middle East by ex-Fugro managers. The number of employees, we've got some 200. Of course, Gardline and Horizon exceed us with 670 and 500, respectively. We are active globally. Of course, we continue our dredging projects, for which we carry out the survey. Gardline will focus on northwestern Europe since we've taken over. Horizon focuses on the Middle East. Looking at the future, we see Gardline as the platform for the part of the world west of Suez, and Horizon for the as the platform for the eastern part, or rather the region east of Suez. Our client base, we are purely captive. We only take care of our internal clients. We often get requests for external clients. We don't do that on principle. Of course, that's different for Gardline and Horizons. They focus on IOCs and NOCs, especially in the Middle East. They are an important customer for Saudi Aramco, but also focus on renewables. That's an important portion of the revenue, about one-third, and Horizon also focuses on that. At present, it's involved in a wind project in Taiwan, and it was also involved in wind projects on the east coast of America. And, of course, we work a lot for EPC contractors, also in the Middle East, for McDermott, for Saipem, and the likes. So quite a prestigious customer, client base. The mobility with us, especially in the hydrographic survey, what we measure, of course, is the profile of what we dredge, the profile of the seabed, and we do that with 3D positioning. Customers want to see nice 3D pictures of the seabed when we are dredging. Well, for Gardline and Horizon, that is different. Of course, part of that is also geophysical, making surveys without actually entering the seabed, and geotechnical is really entering or shooting into the seabed. And an important one for us, but also for Gardline, is environmental surveys and studies. Studies which we contract out a lot, because we can't do that in-house. Well, pro forma to 2018 financials, some almost 200 million euro revenue, and an EBIT margin around 15%. We expect organic growth, but of course it's our intention to invest in this, on the one hand by means of assets, on the other hand by means of the different bolt-on acquisitions if we see attractive targets. Well, the number of vessels. Well, in-house, we don't have special vessels here. We think that we can hire or lease vessels on the site that it works better for us. For Gardline, that's different, of course, because these there are very complicated sets of equipment involved and needed. If you want to fully equip a full survey vessel, you're speaking of almost 10 million of equipment on board, so you don't build that within a very short period. Gardline has one geotechnical, Horizon 3 geotechnical vessels. Gardline has more geophysical vessels. Of course, Horizon has a lot of geotechnical information, also in the area of drill towers. We want to use that also on the North Sea and invest in that a bit more. On the North Sea, you actually see that Fugro is the only serious player as far as geotechnical activities are concerned. We want to compete with that because we see that there is an opportunity in the market in this respect. We also have a number of other vessels. You often talk about smaller vessels, but also two jack-up platforms and three heave-compensated drill rigs, which we can use separately on our vessels. as I said, the main thing is what sort of equipment you have to surround all of that. I won't tire you with all the technical details, but I think Fugro could explain this better. But we've got some 30 seismic spreads, some 120 mapping spreads, even over 600 positioning units, 8 drill towers, 20 CPT units, some 16 remotely operated vessels, also used for survey, not so much for inspection or repair, but really for survey activities. And, of course, a large number of environmental and metocean buoys to measure various items. So this is a very nice set of equipment which allows us globally to service ourselves to a large customer base as well. Well, of course, it's all about boats. We love that. This is the Quest Horizon you see here from Horizon. This is a very special vessel. This still needs to be completed, so it's taken us a long time. We've acquired a ship out of bankruptcy from a Chinese company, very nice acquisition at an attractive price, and now we are working to fit it out along these lines. This will be the most modern geophysical survey vessel in the North Sea, especially Statoil, one of our customers with whom we've got a framework contract, are looking at this eagerly because this will introduce a new way of surveying, which will be very efficient and can work with very high resolution to draw up very nice mappings. So that was our final bit of information about survey, which brings us to the questions, if there should be any questions. If there are no questions, of course, we can turn to lunch straight away. No questions? Well, sorry.
Luc van Beek, De Graaf Petercam.
I'm Peter Kam, Luc van Beek. A few words about the guidance. You thought it was clear, but at the same time, if you look at depreciation, you've done many impairments, and we would expect it to go down. So can you indicate why the net profit still is under pressure in the year to come?
We're looking at the right person.
And it's only
last year's impairments that were implemented during H1, have generated an effect that by and large has been applied in 2018. Some more of this effect is coming in 2019, and let me now disregard the increase of write-downs because of IFRS 16. And in addition, as was said before, we have some write-downs or impairments on the equipment of Horizon. That will be part of this. And in impairments, you also may have impairments of dry docks in the coming years that apply to the last years. There were quite a few, but their write-down periods are quite short. So I think it's more relevant to look at the EBITDA levels, because write-downs or depreciations take little steps, but with Deep Horizon, it will mean a slight increase vis-à-vis the previous year, but the effect has already been taken in the previous year.
Offshore energy, generally.
In the field of offshore energy, you are covered with the order book that you currently have. Do you have anything in the pipeline that can bring this to a positive level, or will new orders come to 2020?
No, because where we have a good filling of our portfolio, that's especially in the cable section, which is doing well for this year. There too, 20 and 21 will be filled even better, but I'm looking particularly at heavy marine transport, talking about bigger projects. Well, those are projects. What you are talking about now, what you are tendering for now, are projects that will be executed actually in 20 or 21. So for the short term, you focus on the spot market. Of course, there are interesting opportunities, such as FPSOs, which unexpectedly come onto the market for transport. But those are not the sweat drips of this world, which you are working towards for 3 years and with appropriate margins too. So you can compensate for that in utilization, but not in margins.
In towage. You only have Kappel Smit in Asia that's left. Is that a strategic choice, or are you looking around as well?
No. In the past 2 years, we looked around very, very closely. Looking back to 2010, we said we are going to try with harbor towage, which we don't regard as a core activity, to create value nevertheless. We took a number of steps. The main one was let's create joint ventures on a 50-50 basis. We can consolidate in regions through that, which we did in America with SAM and in Europe with COTUG. And when we did so, we said we can introduce debt on a non-recourse basis, and the debt over EBITDA, where we say within the group 1 to 1.5 is nice, we can bring a level of 3, 3.5. So by creating that, we've generated some cash from those joint ventures, which we did at the time from the Smit-Lamnalco, because we went to a 3.5 level then. So a more efficient capital structure, cash that we've generated for ourselves, and a nice consolidation step, which has allowed us to realize a cost synergy in those joint ventures. Since 2010, all of that went fairly well, but what you've seen in the past few years is that the competition, especially in container companies, has become so fierce and so sharp that margins are under heavy pressure there. To give an example, when we joined forces with COTUG, the tow rates in Hamburg were around 2,500 euros per day. As we speak, they are offered for 1,000 per day. So these are very substantial markdowns there. Of course, it's not the whole portfolio which is container, but what you often do in harbor positions, if you've got a few large container companies, then on the basis of the number of vessels you have in your basis, you can win some more customers at higher levels, at higher rates. But the lower end is under pressure. Even though the costs have been optimized, you run across your limits. So that's why we said you need further consolidation. What the shipping companies have done is something you need to do yourself, because then you can turn to multi-port agreements. That's the game we want to play. We explored that area over the past few years. In the end, we concluded that we could not find the parties that would enable us to do this. Because we also said what we're not going to do is pay a lot of money to buy things. Our priority is on dredging and offshore. And harbors have always been an opportunity game, never a core activity in that sense. So we play, playing where no money is involved is what we've always done. But at the end of the line, you have to conclude, you know, the scale increase has to continue, but there are other parties that see this and that attach strategic value to that. When you see, as Hans just said, that we have made a 2 million net result with COTUG Smit, and we seem to receive 300 million euro once we have completed that, that's about 150 times the net result. Well, we have agreements that we have about 50% of the net result, which we pay out as dividend. So that's about 300 times the expected dividend flow in a year. Well, those considerations become simpler. It is not a core activity. Something needed to be done there. Financially, at this moment, against these multiples, it's important to move for us. So then you have to strike the iron while it's hot. That's the broader picture, but answering your question, if once you conclude this, you don't conclude so only for Sam Smit, but also for COTUG Smit and for Keppel Smit. Keppel Smit is emphatically within the same row, and they are also on the list of non-strategic. Well, in principle, we want to move with them. At present, there is nothing concrete going on, to avoid misunderstandings, but it is in the same corner.
Okay, clear. Then the last question about the effects of the currency rates on the impairments, because if I understand correctly, there will be a reversal plus in 2019.
Yeah, nice, isn't it, IFRS?
any indication of the amount? And have you taken this on board in the guidance?
40 million.
That's about 40 million. And in our guidance, it's been incorporated in the sense that we speak of the operational result, which I don't regard as being part of the an operational result. Let's say 40 million this year, 40 million next year, I will work it out. The 40 million, which I think is crazy, by the way, but we've tried to say, you know, surely we can't have a book loss of 40 now in the certainty that if you do a transaction, you'll get 40 million back. First reaction is, you know, they've been cooking the numbers, and you want to steer clear of that. But IFRS explains, well, these are two events, two different moments in time, so make it visible. It's a game, you know, over a period of 2 years, which is horrible, of course. But all of this is to make it, to create more insight for you and shareholders. I've commented on that more, but we're straying more and more. But, well, they don't appear to listen to me. It's utter madness. But it's so. It's not in the guidance.
Well, that's clear, at least. Thank you.
Thijs Hollister.
Hollister from ING. Yes, I have a question about your observation about issues with the cable laying contracts. Well, don't mention names or projects or any customers. Can you tell us in greater detail what's happening, what the kind of issues are?
Well, what's happening there, Thijs, is it is a bit exemplary for wind projects. So in that sense, as you know, I tend to be cautious when it concerns wind. If you want to realize a wind project, especially in the North Sea, you want to do so in the season, and you want to stay in the good season. Everybody's aware of that, as are clients. You know, in contracts, you always try to make this fully clear. We need to place our performance within a certain time window and within a certain season. And it's often two seasons that you have to realize a wind farm. You know, the farms on the market now, 100 million wind turbines, sometimes 100, 150 kilometers offshore. Complex seabed circumstances, complex weather and wind conditions, complex logistics involved, complex cable tracks that you are dealing with, and so on. And they preferably like that. You can all do your maths. You know, you want to have the initial cash expenditure as short as possible, preferably zero subsidy, because everybody says, well, people have to pay for that themselves. But you see the whole market ending up in a squeeze now, where the proportion between what can be earned with the activity, you know, from turbine up to an installation and the works, as against the risks involved in these activities, is being slanted a bit. It's not as if in the time when you got 50 to 20% of subsidy, great capitals were earned. It's not as if we've all become so much more efficient, so much smarter, that we can realize such cost differences everywhere. Now, then you also see that clients, or many of the clients, are relatively inexperienced. They hire self-employed officials to accompany these projects, but there's still very little experience in this sector and little standardization. A lot of it is being invented in this sector with changing parties all the time, so there is very little repeat. Well, with cables, there's a sizable portion, a sizable part of repeat. We've done that dozens of times, but the number of parties that have installed wind farms dozens of times is not very big. So I think it's still a very, well, a not very professional industry, which is under great pressure to express costs, and the pressure is, of course, goes down, of course, at the top. They do the calculations. We do an assumption about the efficiency in the sector within 2-3 years. But I say, well, you know, the efficiency for the placement of piles, well, that's simply piling. At a certain moment, you reach the end of your engineering. It is what it is. It's much more decisive to what extent you have a train which actually links up until the very last millimeter to realize those 100 turbines in the sea at a big distance offshore. I can tell you that is a great challenge. If you also use jackets to do so, you first need to build those jackets. There's nobody who says, I'm going to build 100 jackets. You know, they all died who tried to do so. So you have to try and find a lunatic in the Middle East who's prepared to do that. And then you say, we've found three madmen who are going to build 30 to 40 jackets. And, well, you can turn to dear God, that, saying that the jackets are there and that they also come up to expectations within the specifications, not only from the client but also from the authorities. Because, well, the UK specifications, well, they've only worked with oil and gas, and they say, we need the same specifications here. I don't know why they do so, but that's the only thing they can come up with. And then they look at every weld and every seam to see if everything is okay. In short, you can almost, you know, say with absolute certainty that if such logistic trains are put it onto the market with and saying that's your responsibility, well, you can sit back and say, well, that's finally placed there, but, well, that will appear then on D-Day, and this is what you see. You know, all the risks, low prices, all of that is being pushed onto the market, but the number of parties which accepts this and which is also capable of doing this is cannot be found. Most of those have died already. So then you come up with Lamprell. In 1 year, they tore their trousers for 80 million euros. And now they say, well, yeah, I'm not going to get involved in such a project anymore, you know. I've learned my lesson. So in that respect, it's a kind of spreading a spill of misery going to various suppliers. You can say, well, that's all in their field. But then, of course, in the end, the whole puzzle needs to be rolled back and must be there when you're going to lay the cable. It needs to be plugged in somewhere. But if the jacket's not in place, well, where does your plug go and your cable? Well, we've got 15 jackets already. Can you come up already? Well, I've got a ship that can do 50 jackets within a certain time window. Not 15. I can't say 15. Ah, yes. Well, then I'm going to have to come up with something else. So just let me know. Then I'm going to charge standby rates for you. Or this was a disappointment in the past year. It may take such a long time until the madman has his bit organized that you gradually shift into winter. But in the North Sea, well, you maybe have workability of 80-75% in the summer. Well, if you are left with 30% in the winter months, then that's about it. So what you see then is you are shifting along with the client, with the best of intentions. Of course, you get amateurs as clients, and all of them don't see what does it mean when you want to lay cables in November. And at a certain moment, there may be a depression in the Baltic Sea, and you may be, you know, at standstill for 4 weeks, you know. Just a risk, yeah. And then you get endless discussions. Who is causing what? Well, part of the story is that we, as regards the additional costs that occurred, we have remained on the cautious side. What can we recover? Well, I think there is a lot to be recovered, but it takes time. Because, of course, by now, in the wind environment, we've got more claims outstanding than in dredging.
That was my question. You are known to do this.
The moment, I don't want to say much, but I think it's about a couple of million. I'm in good company there. We've got a couple of hundred million claim items outstanding at the moment. They are not income. But it is a reflection of the world in that climate as it is. It's also a reflection, politically too. There are even idiots shouting, you know, we have to invite tenders for concessions. Well, each unto his own creed, but the efficiency and the expansion, the scale expansion in this industry is heavily overestimated. And then you've got, you're talking about new people entering this market. Hirama is also going to work in winter. Ah, those darlings. All of them are going to have a very bad time because they'll all be, dissolved in the end. It's a terrible industry. If as co-developer, supported on all sides, you can set up a wind farm in Belgium, you can still tear your pants, but still keep dry underpants. But those parties, too, will experience things. I've seen them entering a few projects. Well, you know, the environment will be different. It used to be very good work. Look at Van Oort. Until recently, they said, fantastic, this should be done more. Well, the things I've been hearing have changed by now. Well, I can't do it for this money. If you want to gain more efficiency and reach some kind of standardization and also attain more partnerships to go somewhere, then you can take it further. But it's a highly fragmented market, both on the offer side and on the supply side and on the demand side. And what you did see in oil and gas, you saw standards being developed, but there are no standards being developed in the wind activities. So it's still a difficult market, which is a reason for us to be very cautious, especially with a balance of plant adventures. If you take in all those problems, then you may have a couple of million claim before you know it.
Over that. I also have a question about this story with Saudi Aramco. You said that for 10 contracts...
We now have 3 firm requests, and there are 7 coming up that have been announced. So in the months to come, we shall have the opportunity to tender for 10.
Maybe I'm getting you wrong, but in terms of tender expenses, that might be inefficient. So you have many consortia involved, and these are challenging projects on the individual level. So you have a lot of costs related. Am I right?
Yes and no. Of course, it's there's a bit of pick and choose involved. You know, in the 10, there are also items that are not really interesting or for which we are not positioned well. So you devote less time to that. Of course, what you do have there, in the end, you go to standard documents for a jacket, for the installation of a jacket, for the server that is necessarily free for this, the number of pipelines, the procurement. So there's more repeat activities involved there. But a major portion of that is that we are not going to tender 10 times for all these possible projects, or not to the same extent.
Ten aanzien van de verwachtingen van...
That's clear. Now about our expectation, you are participating through Lamprell. They have to make something, and after that, you're involved with transport.
That is correct. So in 2019, this will not generate any work.
And how many costs do you have to incur? Because you need a shop, workshop there, and do you need equipment?
Well, at present, we are tendering with the Bokalif, but also with partners. You don't need to do everything on your own. In the short term, this year in particular, we don't see an acute need to invest in anything. I'm simply waiting to see which way the wind blows. If it is going to be a substantial business, it's calculations, you know. Is it wise to invest anything? At this moment, we are reticent to do so. But in order to build it up and prepare it, you will incur some 10 million costs in the run-up to that. If you don't do anything, you will never win a contract, you know, so you do have to make certain investments. But, you know, tendering in the Netherlands also may easily be 10 million, you know, so...
Eigenlijk, ja.
At last...
Thijs Berghouden,
ABN AMRO. I have a question about the guidance. In order to understand it correctly, unchanged EBITDA, that's under IFRS 2016 accounting, so it's an increase of 20 million under IFRS 16. Well, it's the magnitude I pointed out already. In 2019, some EBITDA will be added because of IFRS 2016, but it will be between 15 and 20 million. And when talking about stability, we have a magnitude of about 350. So including, well, that means that the comparative basis accounting grounds may be slightly different, but that will be compensated for. But as Peter said, we also are dealing with magnitudes. A project may generate a few millions more or less in EBITDA. So we can't cut this precisely. There will be an upward effect as a result of IFRS 16, no doubt. Then returning to the margins in Caen Label Works, I think you said it was about 12-13% or 10-15% as a bandwidth. So now it's about 5%. How should I understand this?
Well, suppose I do a nice cable laying job of 50 million and there's 12%. That's about 6 million. And suppose we have a claim of 25 million with a cost item of 10 million. Well, what's the EBITDA margin then? You know, once I've wound it up, I'll know. That's why I'm always saying it's so difficult in our business. I always try to concentrate on the intake, because then you are calculating with a certain margin. And the margins at which we have intake are still between 10 and 12%. But honesty compels me to admit that in the past we had special projects where it was also almost over 15 or even 20. Very beautiful projects, you know. The landscape is changing, as I told you. Also with the competition, as being as it is. The excesses to the top, you see that less at order intake. But we draw the limit, too. You're not going to work for nothing and subsidize Ørsted from corporate social responsibility consideration. No. But the 10 to 12 margin is still there.
Then a question about the LTM at Saudi Aramco. Will that have a positive effect for Lamnalco?
Sorry, no.
Standard vraag, bagger projecten.
A standard question, dredging project?
8 to 10. There are two standard questions, 8 to 10. Projects, I think for us the main areas are the Middle East and Southeast Asia. Around Singapore, of course, we are busily plying the waters. The polder is taking shape. It would be worth our while if it goes on, and if you are interested, we might visit it. It's really worthwhile seeing the developments there. There's a lot going on there. We are also taking our supervisory directors there this autumn. Indonesia, the restart of Pluit. There is some progress, but I'm cautious. In the Makassar region, where we've just completed a project, we are starting up a new project. We are a bit more positive about that. Semarang, we started a small project with the gateway. Indonesia is also showing activity. The Philippines, well, we have a very big project hanging over the market. That's the development of Manila Bay. For real estate development, a listed company is the client, so the financing is in order in principle, but as always in countries like these, politics are involved as well. Thailand is in the market again with two big harbor port developments, each involving a couple of hundred million. Very interesting. India remains active both in public and in private projects. Especially the private projects are important for us. The Tuticorin will soon be on the market, but there are various new developments too. And not too far away from that, we see particularly in Bangladesh that there are quite some developments in connection with LNG. I said before, the import of LNG is often a rather unremarkable side of our business, but especially on the side of Bangladesh, Pakistan and India, but also on the in the region of China, we see many activities and developments in connection with the import of LNG, which are often combined with power plants. For us, this is often greenfield work, so these are interesting developments with access channels, jetties that need to be built, turning basins, and the whole infrastructure, very often also combined with breakwater. So these are very interesting developments where we see a lot of activities being developed and in the offing. You saw how Shell explained their figures. A good increase in LNG in the past year, and there they also expect this growth to flourish further in the years to come. The bottleneck is not on the export side, but particularly on the import side. The bottleneck is not in the vessels anymore either. Just look at Korea. What sort of LNG vessels are being built there? That's you can't believe what you're seeing. So a great transport export infrastructure is being expanded, but the import infrastructure is lagging behind. Australia and New Zealand, we recently tendered for Lyttelton in New Zealand, and we completed that for $30 million. The fairway for us is a relatively small work. For New Zealand, it was the work of the century. There was great political attention and ecological attention devoted to it as well. We did a fine piece of work there. Adelaide, we have not got confirmation that we've been awarded the project yet, but the deepening of the port is probably going to come to us. Another nice work in Australia is Woodside, Scarborough, Pluto 2, you might say, which we were involved in a few years ago, a nice shore approach, very much in line with our business. We've had very good meetings so far, and we are looking at that positively. In the Middle East, an important region, of course, Oman, there's variation orders for Duqm, and there's also variation orders in the pipeline, such as a Navy port that needs to be installed. An interesting bit for us to do, and the access channel to the port in Kuwait, a very big hopper job, is under is in action now. Abu Dhabi is doing a lot in the area of offshore development, and it wants to have islands constructed. Well, NGC is firmly positioned for this. They also contracted Highland Gasha, but they don't have the capacity because it's a very big hopper job. So we're also talking to them to carry out a big portion of that work. So there's a number of shore approaches too, but you may have islands in the sea as one thing, but the oil and gas also needs to be transported to shore. So we have pipe shore approaches there as well. Iraq is a very nine country with Al-Faw developments, including the development, the financing. We are involved together with CCCC, a Chinese party, a very strong combination, including the financing that we can offer there together with the Chinese. A fine project which needs to be blessed politically too before it will come our way finally. Africa is interesting on the East Coast in particular. We're working in Kenya, and we are also looking at follow-up works together with the Japanese. Mozambique is going to be interesting, LNG in particular, a big shore approach that could take place in 2020, and we are offering both at EXO and Aladarco In Europe, some countries are a bit calmer. Things are calm in the UK in the run-up to the Brexit. Scandinavia at this moment is calm, but for next year will be a bit busier. In the Netherlands, we've got a lot of infrastructural works that we look at with a very selective approach. In the past year, we again had a 4% margin, so that's reasonably stable in what we want. But the art is to keep tendering in a very disciplined manner. In France, there will be a big expansion for Le Havre and Port-la-Nouvelle. Duitsland, Fehmarn and Eldena are known. In Romania, the beaches, the EIB-financed beaches, there's 300 million from the European Investment Bank to tackle beach suppletions. So the first lot has been tendered, and in the next month we'll see the following ones. In Russia, there are nice developments in the north in connection with LNG, but also in the Black Sea. Taman developments, a lot of work will be involved in Russia as well. Chile, the development of San Antonio is still going on there, but it'll take time to find partners for that development too. LNG Canada, we are fully involved in that. Kitimat Chevron has indicated 18 months after Shell to follow there, and then that's a job involving some 200 million, and Hibernia could follow closely on that, but the expectation is that all three LNG projects in Canada will go on. So much for the dredging activities. As for offshore, I already mentioned the good developments in the FPSO. The Buckshave, not self-propelled, but we've got nice transport opportunities with the Vanguard. I already indicated, especially in transport, we see a move from upstream activities more to downstream activities. Lots of LNG activities, especially in the USA. Major investments there, also petrochemical developments, but I also indicated the Middle East is keen on that as well. So as far as the logistics side of HMT, I'm quite positive about the coming years. Jackets for wind farms, of course, we're also looking at that. We don't regard it as a very important activity, but if we can combine it with the installation, it can be attractive because we are one of few, if not the only party, that are capable of arranging the transport and of placing them. Of course, you need the madman. You can't find the madman anymore. So the jackets also need to be transported. For instance, they're looking at jackets in Batam for a project in Europe. That's the lengths to which things can go. Well, for the Vanguard, it's nice that before long we are going to transport a fish farm. Then you say, well, have you gone totally out of your wits? Well, I initially responded to this with a measure of skepticism, but I must say, these are fish farms, salmon fish farms for Norway, huge contraptions that they have built in China, but then they need to go to Norway. And then such a fish farm turns out to fit just on the Vanguard. It's jutting out a bit, but the stability is okay. So we've got a very nice contract now, and the builder is so enthusiastic that for 2020 he wants to get involved in the next one with us. So at FPSO rates for a fish farm, well, you can't be choosy, you know. I already mentioned the diving activities, Atlantis and the Da Vinci. Ah, there it is. Yes, I was thinking of Leonardo. No, it must be the Da Vinci then. Right. So those two then. At the end of last year, we decided to steer emphatically towards the UK market. We opened an office in Aberdeen. It's now reasonably equipped. It's opposite the office of BB. We could cross the street and get some interesting people from them. such as the whole team, which also did all of the work for Repsol. They also brought 100 diving work for Repsol, so we had booked some 8 days for 2018, which is not unusual for these activities. At present, we are at 700 days, an important portion of that for a long-term contract in Dubai, but many days for the two deep diving support vessels, too, especially in the UK environment. Well, looking at the Brexit, which will come to us in some form or other, it may be good to say that we have positioned ourselves excellently because the port from which we will be working is in the UK with those vessels, but we are Brexit compliant in terms of where the work is positioned. Well, marine installation, there's a number of things in the offing. In the first year, Hans said, we had a very good year for the Boka lift, also all for the wind farms. This year, we will keep spinning in the wind, especially, but we also will be involved in a number of decommissioning projects, Fulking Viking in the UK, LT Neptune will follow afterwards. We've got a nice job in West India, Taptis, which we can also execute in the winter season for Shell near Borneo. A decommissioning job for the Boka lift. So as we see things, after a good utilization in 2018, we expect good utilization rate again for 2019. And we've got a number of projects for the Boka lift in 2022. So that's going surprisingly well. I just mentioned we chartered a new CSV against very attractive standards, the Boka Falcon construction vessel. We are looking at floating installations, and by means of the assets we have, the opportunities for us to increase. So we see a sizable number of portions coming in the combination of wet or dry transport with a possible hookup, because we can offer those full packets without any interface up to the positioning and transportation. Offshore wind, finally, many, many prospects, both in Europe and beyond. We do focus on Europe in particular. Of course, we are looking at Taiwan, we are looking at the United States, but we do, for the reasons I've just mentioned, see Europe as the place that needs our focused look, both for the installation and for the cable laying activities. We want to be disciplined, especially in Europe, because there's a lot in the offing. There's also new work coming up in the UK, where we are one of a number of preferred suppliers. In France, we have FECAM together with WIG and SICAM, which we have probably gained now. So we are going to build up experience in France. We are well positioned at Inchcape, as you know, and the CFD will come up. So this is largely the story as far as the pipeline and major development in dredging and offshore, as I see it now. The pipeline for salvage is always more difficult to predict, of course, but it can also be interesting. André.
Mark Verbeek, the idea.
When looking at offshore services, we have 40-50 million in revenues. Can you tell me about the three segments, services, subsea, and survey? Hans, can you do that? Survey amounts to 25-30 million in 2018, or percentage. Subsea amounts to 30%, and the remaining part is heavy marine transport and other services, anchor handling, tugs, shields, etc. Fine. And we're looking at marine transportation services. How much low end was there this last year that will be out?
That was very little, just a few dozen million.
Then I saw that the order book of Slim Smith Lanolka had increased significantly. Do you see improvement in the markets? It has been difficult, obviously, in the past years. Do you see improvements?
Well, you know, if you roll into a 10-year contract, as happened in Bahrain, of course, that gives a tremendous boost. But you must be aware that sometimes those terms can be very long, extremely long. In the order book, in the order portfolio, you may have a big effect in the first 5 years. So rolling in and out of those positions has a big effect. But in general, it's connected, especially to oil and gas. It's not as if there are many great developments which will lead to many new terminal contracts. We don't see the market picking up tremendously all at once. But we do see there, as I indicated before, that's also why we have also linked our business development at offshore to those of Lamnalco. We've said import is an important leg because the terminal we mentioned near Bahrain is an import terminal. And we are working in the same way in tendering for a contract in El Salvador together with Sam Smith, because they are better positioned in that region. But we're also looking at the opportunities in Bangladesh that we are involved in. So there we see the opportunities for the next few years.
Thank you.
André Mulder, Kepler.
André Mulder, Kepler. My first question is this. The question is in line with the previous question. To which extent are you going to indicate margins per subdivision for contracting and services to get an even clearer picture?
We can consider that. I'm not promising that, but I'll have to see what it means first.
Could you add some details now, also in light of the order book?
The margin is best.
Well, the margin at services, you can imagine, you know, they've been negative. And the margin at contracting, we have compensated for this positively. So that's where we are at present. And the order portfolio for services is very limited. Nearly all of that is short term. So you have to live from hand to mouth there. So a big part of the portfolio is the contracting.
Have you been affected by the Fugro effect? One of the defense lines was that a survey company in the hands of a contractor wouldn't work.
Well, their revenue has suffered.
That's upward, but did you have any observations?
No, none whatsoever. It goes further. Horizon is more sensitive because they are the special supplier for fellow contractors, McDermott and SIPEC. I discussed this with them at length, and they said if we can offer this good service at the good price, then we're in business, you know. They see that as segmented things. So my biggest concern is really is in that corner with governments are a non-issue. When, you know, the fact that Guardline first does the surveys and then you need to discuss things, they only see that as an advantage, positive. You know what you're talking about. At the end of the day, you have to tender for the survey separately and for the installation separately.
What heavy marine transport?
About heavy marine transport, can you indicate what kind of major orders you have in the order book right now?
Well, really big order, big jobs. You end up in Canada. What's it called again, Martin? White Rose. Ah, yes. That's an important one. Most of them we are still fully involved in tendering because you see that platforms need to be built and...
And what year is White Rose?
White Rose was going to be 20, but it's going to be shifted to 2021, so there will be a year's delay. Whether they mind that, I don't know.
You mentioned Scarborough Browse in Australia.
And landing.
Scarborough Browse is a shore approach, very interesting. You are talking about 100-plus job, but it does not have any transport activities.
Then my last question. What vessels are on your wish list?
Well, as I said just now, a CSV, you know, especially 400-plus with enough deck space, that is not a major investment. The main thing We philosophized about this earlier on. Do you have to think of a second vanguard if the dry FSPO transport really becomes hot? Do you have to look at the second crane vessel? Those are the two big considerations that you might have. Well, we said we see that as an integral part of the new business plan, because you have to take a view of the market, of your position in the market, of the competitors you are up against, of the pipeline as it is at that moment. So we are shifting that deliberation until the new corporate business plan. Because it means we won't be making that decision before the end of the year.
Falcon betreft.
About the Falcon now, is an upward recovery of the market, and wouldn't you then like to own ships and not charter them for a couple of years?
Well, it's 3+2, so it's 5 years at rates, you know, if I do my maths and count back, we almost have to give them money on the go as well. So it's 3 to 5 years. There's a purchase option too.
Had the vessel been converted, or did you do that?
No, this is purely for CSV vessel. It's a beautiful ship from an estate, you know, who knew how to build boats but not how to do business. It's a beautiful vessel. It was purchased, I think, by a Thai entrepreneur for his daughter. You know, that he used to be in a haberdashery earlier on, but anyway, they purchased it in Gibraltar. They put it there on full steam with a crew, and they looked at the horizon for a year, and nothing was coming up. Nothing was showing up. We were working with the sister vessel, the Fulmar, to buy it. But I said, well, you know, there is a sister vessel, and it's been sold, but it's not doing anything. So that's when we started talking. And, well, we came to a beautiful charter, everybody happy. Because he has to pay for it every month. So far, it's been a huge cash drain for him. And for the first time now, he doesn't have to pay anything, and some money is coming in. So that is a great progress there. And at a beautiful price, we've got a ship which is fully in good order. It's now painted in our colors. Is it still in Rotterdam, or has it left yet? Speaker is inaudible. Anyway, well, we are looking at a new development for wind to do some pre-plowing, because you do see a lot of damage being sustained in cable laying. If you've got a combination of trenching, plowing, and laying, you know, the cable follows the trenching at once. And if you are in a difficult seabed, there may be lots of damage incurred with lots of consequences involved. So we are looking at the concept of pre-plowing, but if you want to do that, well, you really you need the 300 to 350 bullet pull to achieve that through the hull track. You know, if you really want to do that properly, that would be a good solution. That's solution two, which suddenly comes much nearer, because we've got such a ship in the fleet. If you've got two, you can play with them, you know, installation, cable laying. So the good thing is, internally we can create a good bit of revenue, and externally we can also get good margins for ships like those.
Bert Kuipers, KBC, dus 2009.
It's now 2019. HMC will more and more depend on the spot market.
Already, it's not as if that's coming up. We're already in that situation. That's the current situation.
In the course of the past weeks or month, have you seen any collusions, any competition on the spot market, or is the situation the same still?
No, it is what it's been for a while now. But what you do see is there's more volume in the area of logistic management, and that keeps a number of people involved. There's also a volume in jackets. So at the bottom of the market, there is some transport volume. As I said, the first 2 months, when you talk about utilization, were not bad, but I can't see any trend there, because you're really working in a spot market, living day by day.
Okay. When you look at the overflow of activities in the dredging in 2019, for instance, Turkey wasn't there. Is this off the table now, or is it too uncertain?
Yes, exactly. You know, there's more in that category, but given all the developments you see in Turkey, I think they are first going to do the greengrocer and then the channel. So that's fine, but of course you shouldn't see it as a stillborn child. We've seen crazier things, but a lot needs to be done before this is a realistic project. That's also why I didn't mention it.
And the new Silicon Valley of Copenhagen, in brackets, does also fall under this heading?
No, I think it could be realistic, but you're not talking about islands. Well, if you see what we are involved with in Eiburg, Amsterdam, that's bigger than what they are talking about. So developments near Amsterdam are bigger than the developments near Copenhagen. Everybody, of course, does it for the first time, and then it seems a big, big job. I think it's more the PR, but if you look at the volume of sand involved, those are not mega projects. You know, it's not the walking islands in Dubai.
Thank you.
Nog een kleine vraag van mijn kant.
I have a brief question. I refer to the EBA guidance. If I understand correctly, under IFRS, it's 15 to 20 million, and on a like-for-like basis that you already mentioned, there's a number of million euros that will show a positive result in 2019 because of the scrapping of the lower-end transportation vessels. You'll have a benefit, but the Horizon activities are not part of this. Am I right?
Well, in the end, it's included, of course, but it's pluses and minuses, you know. In the end, it balances out to a relatively stable EBITDA. But, you know, 5% around 350 is different from 5% around, 86, 383. Do the maths. I can reverse 10 million for 83 is 10 million on 350, so, you know. Calculating is a very special art these days. Anyway, the absolute effects versus the relative effects are quite different around 80 than around 350. So they work out approximately, 4.5 times different.
That's clear, but for my understanding about Horizon, you indicated in the press release that it would be 100 million in sales and acquisition. I see an EBIT margin here of 15%, so that would be around 15 to 25 million EBITDA in 2019.
For Horizon, what percentage do we have there?
But it's fully deconsolidated.
Yeah, okay.
If you fully consolidate it, yes, but we were not calculating that way. Then it would be included fully, of course.
100% van Horizon.
But your guidance is based on 100% of Horizon, isn't it?
Well, it's not as if I sat down to look at my spreadsheet yesterday with Hans. Let's calculate what it's going to be, but I wanted to know that until the, you know, up to the last million. The guidance in a company like ours, I already told you how claims can swerve in both directions. You know, if we really hit a nail on the head, our EBITDA is fairly stable. But looking down, it will be quite a challenge to achieve the same operational net result. But I have to disappoint you. Have you made a spreadsheet?
No, I didn't, but we have referred to this in the past, talking about the contribution of an uncoated split. And this indeed falls away against the other, with adding or the detracting of millions, you end up with a magnitude that can affect the bottom line of operations in a positive and a negative sense.
Look, the underlying idea, I hope that this is the audience that will take this on board, but we learn every day, don't we? Sometimes you are a bit disappointed, but you know, you give the implicit message, maybe in the next few years with this company, we have to look more at the EBITDA than the net result. maybe we have to pay the cash dividend 80%, not because we've booked such a good result, but because of a very good balance sheet and realize a very good EBITDA. So that's an underlying thought. You know, look at the EBITDA a bit more and stability there. You know, if I win one claim, that may be 40 million. Well, to say anything useful about that today, you know, as Thijs already mentioned, we want to take time. It's not as if you start winding up a claim because then I'll get my net result that I promised. And then we end up in the wrong environment with our business. So what we're saying is if you are somewhere between 0 and 100, my question, what will the result be? Well, Mike, what will the result be? Yeah, somewhere between 0 and 100. Yeah, well, you can't work with that. That's no guidance. Yeah, well, you know. Okay, we have to cut it a bit more nicely. If you ask me, where will your EBITDA come? Well, I think that could stay near 350 and generate a certain amount of cash. And I'm also saying we steer the company on that side rather than going into millimeter work where the result is coming from. And whether you are assured or reassured or disappointed, well, you know, that was the underlying message. So I can't make it more explicit than that.
It's clear I'm stopping now.
Any other questions? Okay, well, then everything must be clear. Thank you very much for attending this session, and we'll have lunch afterwards.